All right. Thank you for that. It's one of the last talks of the day. We don't have much time, so hope it'll be a good one for you guys. Yeah, so my name is Arun. I work with UNICEF. I'm the blockchain lead at the ventures team within the UNICEF Office of Innovation, and we are here to chat with one of our portfolio companies, Statwick, around the supply chain solution that they have worked on and the impact they are creating, along with a partner of ours on, you know, how to get these open source digital public goods funded. May I ask you guys to quickly introduce yourself, starting with Mansi?
Sure. Thanks, Arun. Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Mansi. I'm the head of product at Statwick. We are a blockchain-based company where we are basically focused on enhancing the transparency and efficiency in the global health public supply chains. What we essentially do is help stakeholders keep a track of all their transactions and give end-to-end visibility in the supply chains.
Thank you, and thank you both for the invitation today. David Casey here, director of Funding the Commons. Funding the Commons is a community and event series focused around exploring public goods funding mechanisms. And we do conferences, hackathons, open source developer residencies. We just completed one in Chiang Mai last month, and public goods funding experiments, so applied experiments using new mechanisms.
So in case you are wondering what a UNICEF person is doing here, so we have been working with blockchain since 2015. We run something called the UNICEF Venture Fund, where we provide funding for early stage startups such as Statwick that Mansi is working for. And we are also interested in digital public goods. We are part of the Digital Public Goods Alliance, and that's how we got to know David. So hence, here I am. First question to Mansi, could you please maybe talk a bit of the product around the vaccine supply chains, please?
So I think the problem, the challenge that we were looking at was twofold. So the first initial issue was around how these supply chains are fragmented, and specifically in the healthcare systems, how they rely on siloed information which do not talk to each other. The other issue was also around product wastage in terms of expiry, counterfeiting, and cold chain failures. So this was like the primary agenda that we wanted to, like, you know, solve firsthand and, like, you know, have a unified platform. So that is where we've built a solution called Vaccine Ledger, which typically ensures that every physical asset in the supply chain, we create a digital twin of that. And so from how that works is that from the time of procurement or from the point of manufacturing, and every time the product changes hands, we basically record the journey of products as and how it is passing on. So we help ensure that, you know, all these stakeholders are completely aware of where the product is in supply chain right now. And we did also have, like, issues looking around how 30% of the global vaccines were wasted, and there was lack of information even within you know, many organizations who were, like, sending out products to various LMIC countries, but there was, like, lack of visibility whether it's reaching the final beneficiaries or not. So it becomes very important and critical to ensure that the life-saving vaccines and medicines reach to those people, especially in the underdeserved areas. And that's how I think what we're trying to do is leverage blockchain and provide that, you know, the whole data in real time for every stakeholder to make informed decision.
That's fantastic. So blockchain here is, of course, used to track every vial of the vaccine, I think, which adds a next layer of traceability and, you know, visibility, which all the stakeholders get. And talking of stakeholders, where have you piloted this solution so far?
So we've had a couple of deployments. So we had it both on the private side also and on the public. So we did a couple of deployments in Costa Rica. We had partnership with IDB, Inter-American Development Bank, who actually opened doors for us to, like, help track products within that market. So the major issue at hand was that once the manufacturers send the product, they only have visibility till Panama, and after which there's, like, complete lack of understanding of how is the product moving in the country. So we did make a deployment there, and even during COVID, we were able to, like, track 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines, and also the end beneficiaries who were were receiving it. And we did have another major deployment with UNICEF. So the way it works is that we have an LTA with UNICEF, so that basically gives us that opportunity to like go to multiple countries. We recently just deployed in Bangladesh. So we are ensuring that we are tracking the product from the central procurement level at the country. And there are like multiple various stakeholders within the entire ecosystem who are also going to be a part of it. The major challenge I think we did have around was, there were barriers in terms of digital infrastructure. So they did not have like enough capabilities that could support, and even in terms of remote locations, right? So there were like very, very remote locations where you do not have like bandwidth capacity, internet bandwidth capacity. So we did employ a good workaround plan for that, to have an offline mode, which basically helped people record information in real time. So once they have the data connectivity back, they can like, they don't really have to enter it again. But there were, again, issues with having localization in place. So we did understand that it was going to come up eventually, like as in how we like, naturally grow to multiple countries. We would have to like, have the application available in multiple languages. And how we have also made the whole thing accessible is that it's a combination of both web and mobile app. So the way it works is that the user who was initially recording it manually on a book and pen and paper, he has the access on his mobile app. So all he just has to do is download the app, record the transaction. So there's like no double work that he would necessarily have to do. So in that sense, I think what we're also trying to do is have some concept called incentivization for making it easier for people to adopt the application. So that's where I think with UNICEF Bangladesh, what we have done is like the demographics are vast there. So we are looking at almost 100,000 million doses of vaccination that we are going to record every year. And that's like a huge number. And then we have like good 150,000 plus users and wallets that we are going to generate just with UNICEF Bangladesh. The plan is also to like scale up to various other supply chains. So we've had like parallel conversations running with animal vaccines, for nutritional vaccines. So the way it works is that the whole platform has the capability to not just expand within the human vaccine space, but it has like a similar use case in various other dimensions. So it has the potential of creating a good, 5 million wallets in the next coming up year or two. So we're looking at like some potential contracts coming up, hopefully soon.
Thanks a lot for not just highlighting the challenges that you guys had to overcome in a real-world use case, but also the kind of impact that could be generated. So she was talking of millions of wallets, and stuff like the offline mode, it gets very real out there. So that is a lifesaver, actually, which enables the blockchain to always be in sync. And there are other things that you mentioned as well. That's actually fantastic. So now I'll switch to David. So as you could see, David, like these guys managed to not just build the tech, but also make it accessible and make it work in the real world. And just in Bangladesh, they'll soon start tracking 100,000 vaccines with thousands of wallets. So for projects such as this, Web3 projects, real world, open source, what would be the sources of funding that they can tap into? Could you please take us through an overview of that?
Yeah, so I think I've always thought that this is a very interesting use case, real world, real time supply chain tracking. I remember a project from about 6 or 7 years ago, I believe it was called Wabi, that was more focused on food, and there was like a lot of kind of fake ingredients issues, especially in China. I'm not sure what happened to it, but I thought it was a brilliant use case. And it's like, it's not like sexy because it's real world and there's not that much to speculate on, but it's actually like really, really useful for millions of people. I think in terms of funding, in crypto we have this kind of phrase of public goods funding, but often what people mean are funding network goods, which are kind of digital public goods, open source, that is specifically applicable to the Optimism Superchain ecosystem, or the Polygon ecosystem, or the Ethereum ecosystem, or the Stellar ecosystem, which is a little different than when kind of government, public sector, UNICEF folks talk about public goods, which are kind of like the public that is, you know, the human species, or the public of Bangladesh. So in that light, there are a number of public goods funding systems being developed, and some really interesting work being done in the Optimism ecosystem with retroactive public goods funding. There's a kind of old protocol, Gollum Foundation, which deployed something called Octant, which uses quadratic funding, like Gitcoin, to fund a number of, again, mostly Ethereum open source public goods. What I think these ecosystems are looking for is essentially transaction volume on their chain, on their network. And so deploying these millions of wallets on a decentralized public blockchain network like a layer two on top of Ethereum would be, I think, critical to going after public goods funding from one of these ecosystems. There's always the option of launching a token, using that token as an incentive layer for real-world validators or auditors that are, you know, tracking the vaccines as they go through time and space using basic devices that millions of people have around the world. So you enable kind of large amounts of people that are not technical to directly engage in validating transactions or kind of interactions. So these are some ideas. And then beyond Web3, I think this is a real use case for public sector, for governments, for large nonprofits and philanthropic bodies like Gates Foundation. I think that the this use case goes way beyond Web3. I think that Web3 and blockchain foundations should be very interested in these use cases. Unfortunately, it's generally only if you're using some specific stack or technology, like I mentioned, of a specific layer two, would they generally become interested? Ethereum Foundation's an exception. They fund a lot of interesting research.
Thanks for that. What got me into blockchains for the very first time many years ago was actually the real life potential of this technology helping society as in a whole. And then now we are beginning to see these real world use cases. And you already mentioned about, let's say, the amount of data that has to be stored on chain for the sources of public goods funding from the Web3 ecosystem to be interested in them. What else should these projects keep in mind, apart from just using the blockchain, of course, that, you know, goes without saying? How else can they make themselves attractive?
I think as we spoke about a bit earlier, understanding how can we engage people in the real world beyond developers, bringing this technology outside of the kind of internal circles that it, I feel like, also I also got interested in blockchain about 11, 12 years ago for real world use cases and impact, and always have been really interested in projects, and that's how we got connected. So looking at how can people around the world living in places like Costa Rica, Bangladesh, use very basic and rudimentary devices to confirm things that are happening in the real world and reward them directly on a public blockchain for those actions.
Okay. So impact can, of course, be generated by Web3 projects. They may also be generated by Web2 projects who are doing fantastic work. The thing is, these Web2 projects are typically not aware of how to become Web3, how to get the data on-chain and all that. So how can the Web3 ecosystem, the funding ecosystem, be more inclusive and, you know, including them? Like, do they have to learn some protocol? Do they have to, like, or could there be easier pathways for these guys to enter the ecosystem as well?
Yeah, I think this is an issue with Web3. It's more insular than it could be. And a lot of use cases are being built specifically for the Web3 community. I think these types of exceptions are really interesting, and the broader crypto ecosystem would do well to engage. more. I have seen some kind of retroactive airdrops and funding mechanisms going to GitHub profiles of Web2 developers that may have never heard of the people sending them the token, but I think ZK Sync might have done this. A few recent airdrops have gone to Web2 developers that are building libraries that have been leveraged by crypto protocols, and then they send it like directly to a GitHub address and account, and that's one way that I've seen the Web3 community engaging beyond kind of the small, relatively small but growing ecosystem that we have here.
That's very, very encouraging to know that new avenues are opening up for broader areas of impact to be funded by the Web3 ecosystem. So that's fantastic. That's all the time that we have. Thank you so much, Matt Boatmansi and David, for, of course, highlighting the solution and, of course, talking about the ways in which solutions such as Statwig and the Vaccine Ledger could get funded. Thank you so much.
Thanks.